What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of Knowing is Knowing. I'm your host, Rashad Young, and as always, I appreciate you guys tuning in. Man, today's episode was so phenomenal. It was so inspiring. I have the guest and the honor to have Crystal Jaimes, who is an engineer career coach. We talk about so many different things. Honestly, it felt like a therapy session for myself as well. It was a very engaging conversation. We talk about who she is, her life, navigating engineering, her being a career coach, even learning a little bit more about myself as she asked me some good questions. And so if this is a conversation that you're looking forward to, for something that's deep and inspiring, this is the one for you. Her information will be in my link description, so make sure to check out her information on Instagram and other social media platforms. And as always, I appreciate you guys tuning in. I'll see you guys soon.
Well, Crystal, I appreciate you so much for joining. I'm super excited to connect with you and learn more about you. Similar to all of my guests, really what's really important to me is to humanize people and their experiences, right? So obviously when you have a career path, that's one thing, and there's different identities that we connect to, but I think it's really important that we humanize us as people. So my first question I'd like to ask you is, who are you to the world?
Who am I to the world?
To the world, yeah.
Oh my God, that's a big question. I mean, to the world, I'm an engineer. I'm a mom. I have four siblings. To the world, on the outside, probably seen as like really intelligent. Yeah.
That's a good question. All right, what about on the inside?
Okay, so on the inside, I am much more sensitive and emotional than I think a lot of people have seen in my life. And so I love to give to the world. And the way that I do that is through writing, through poetry. I love working with people. I love coaching people. I think that's the deeper crystal that not a lot of people see or notice at first.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think the reason I ask that question is because I always think there's two parts to people, right? So obviously you have the outside part of who you are. And as you mentioned, your occupation being in engineering, I can imagine that you kind of had to have a harder exterior, especially being a woman in engineering, especially a male dominant field. The idea, I would assume, to feel like you have to prove yourself in the space constantly, I think naturally what makes you feel like you got to harden up. So when you have to identify that, and also being a mother and a sibling and all those other things, you know, people are getting certain parts of you in these different spaces. And so everybody don't really get a chance to see the real you. So, I mean, I appreciate you sharing that. But I am curious, though, how did you get into engineering, especially for somebody that seems so creative?
You literally just said it, right? Like, I grew up in an environment where I very much felt like I did have to prove myself. And the way that I did that was through my intellect. Of course, I didn't realize this until like much later in life. You know, I didn't realize that was my motivation and my drive for like a really long time. But, you know, so, oh gosh, let me see. When I was in high school, I didn't know what the heck I wanted to do. I never thought about it. Like, I was too busy just doing other things, like being a second mom to my siblings and trying to figure out, like, trying to help my mom with like everyday life, right? Never had like really the opportunity to think about myself or like ask myself what I wanted. So I remember when it came time for like college applications and everything, my high school counselor was where are you applying? Right. And I'm like, I don't know. Like I haven't applied anywhere. I don't even know what I want to do. So I actually missed the like college application deadlines for a lot of schools. And she went into like mama bear mode. She was, because at the time, I mean, Technically, I graduated like second in my class in high school.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so she was like, she couldn't believe me. So she helped me put together some applications like super last minute. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. And she was like, you should go into like STEM because I'm Latina, I'm a woman. She's like, there's a lot of opportunity. You're really smart. You're really good in math and science. And I was like, okay. So I ended up getting into where are you from?
Oh, Craig, I was gonna get there. I'm from St. Louis. St. Louis,
I
born.
live in California.
Okay, what part?
Southern California, but Southern California is very big. I'm very coastal towards like Torrance, Redondo, Manhattan
Okay.
Beach area.
Okay. I appreciate you giving me that that deeper explanation. 'Cause when everybody tell me they're from California, they're like, I'm from Northern California. Do you know how many small cities and different parts
It's
are in there? You know, so I
yes.
appreciate that. Okay, so Southern California.
Yeah. So I ended up getting into one of the universities that's here in Southern California, in Westchester, actually. So not too far from where I currently reside.
Okay.
I went into engineering, but I went into engineering undecided.
Okay.
And I stayed undecided for like 2 years because I didn't know what kind of engineering I wanted to do. And then I ended up settling on like engineering physics because I did love the science aspect. And what I realize now is that I loved the science aspect because of like the exploration, right? And like, feeling like this world is so much bigger than us. So that's how I became an engineer.
Off of a last application push, and as you know, as a high school counselor, because I am a high school counselor by day, that is really like our worst nightmare. Watch, especially like the real smart kids. It is kind of like how did we get here? And obviously, there's different pieces, but no, I had a couple of students this year when they applied late. I wasn't surprised because I knew them pretty well. And I would tell them that you're gonna be one of those kids at the end of the semester that's gonna come to me and be like, hey, I need help with applying to college. But a kid that's second in their class, you are kind of like, you would assume you would know what school you wanna go to, what you wanna do, or have an idea what you wanna do. So it's cool how things get there. I want to transition for a bit. What are the different identities that you have? I'm always curious to talk to moms in particular, especially moms in I was again higher male fields like engineering or lawyer. What has, I guess, motherhood taught you in regards to the balance of being a mom and also being in the space of engineering?
Oh gosh. Wow. So much. So much. I've been thinking about that a lot lately, actually, because like engineering is very left brain, right? It's very analytical. And like being in the field of engineering, being in a male-dominated field, really, I don't want to say it pushed me into like more masculine energy because I
Sure.
think that I went in that direction because I was kind of already there, right? Just like
Sure,
very high
sure.
achieving, super competitive growing up.
Yeah.
And so that's the mom that my kids got most of their life. And I'm realizing this like later on, because later on in life, I even found myself struggling with how do I tap into like these more creative, softer parts of me,
Sure.
right? And like showing those parts of me to my kids when they were older in high school. And that was really, really, really challenging. I mean, I definitely didn't do it on my own, right? Like I needed help, I ended up like and that's even how I got involved into coaching, right? Because like I needed coaching first. Yeah. And but my kids are older now. My son's 22, my daughter's 19. And it's interesting because now I find my now that I find myself integrating this like softer part of me, right? And the part that's more feminine and fluid, it's like, okay, well, how do I bring this to work? Because it's really exhausting to feel like you have to show up in different ways in different places. And I think that that's a story that we tell ourselves. Well, when I'm in this space, this is how I have to be because, you know, I have to. And it's not entirely not true, but what I didn't realize until I started doing it is that I can integrate all of who I am at work too. That's like my journey right now, like in the middle of that. So, yeah. That was a great question. Thank you.
Yeah, so I guess a little more context about me since we're learning about each other. So yeah, I'm high school counselor by day, and I'm also a counselor in training, so I'm about to be a licensed therapist.
Oh,
So I
nice.
work with people all day, every day, and a lot of
Yeah.
the clients that I had recently are actually women and their mothers, and they talk about their struggles with finding a balance with, I guess, embracing that softer side. A lot of times because they've had to harden up. Because of the
Yeah.
situations, oftentimes splits, the field that they work in, that they are a little bit more high achieving. And it's really interesting seeing that, I guess, emotional wall come down
Oh,
where
yeah.
they're like, I don't want to be like this. And then it's like, when I was seven, I had to,
Yes.
it's a, so when you said high achieving, I was like, okay, I could see kind of why. There's like this need to prove themselves, and we all have that. We all have that, I guess, that feeling or nature to want to prove ourselves. And I had to learn a little bit earlier, like, what am I proving this? Like, who am I doing this for? Am I doing this because I think it's right? Am I doing this because of all the things that I've heard and said in my life? And so I'm not that much older than your kids. I just turned 30, and so for some odd reason, like it clicked. Like I turned 30, and I was like, I don't care no more, man. Like, whatever is my goal and my purpose in life, I need to do that for myself and what is I'm meant to do versus like trying to prove a world wrong of something because of the thing that my teacher said when I was 7 or 8. Kind of like all this negative energy I was carrying, or the ex-girlfriend that didn't believe in me, like all these weird things, man. So, that's why I think these conversations are really important, and that's kind of why I started to do these interviews again. With people, it's kind of like, all these people are doing all these high achieving things, but like, who are they at the root? You know, like you mentioned, you having this creative side, the poetry side, which I'm gonna get into it to a second. Like, how hard is it to navigate those things if we don't take the time to really unlearn some of the things that are keeping us to really tap into that creativity, the wall? Because emotionally, poetry and like writing is very, very pulling as a writer myself. I get
I
it.
love that.
I can only write when I'm upset. I cannot write when I'm happy. I have to be underneath some sort of emotional distress, especially because I do write poetry too. So it gets all the things that I've been holding on to out. So how did you get into poetry? Like, what was it for you? Was it something that you did growing up that you just dabbled into? Like, was it like a crush you had? Because that's how I started. I started like a crush I had in fifth grade.
I love that.
And I wrote
Oh
something.
man. So I've always loved writing. I wish my high school counselor, like looking back, I wish she had asked me, what do I like to do? What do I enjoy? Because I started writing like around like 11, 12, and I realized I was good at it because I was like student body president, right, of like my 7th grade class, and we had to give quarterly speeches, and my speeches were very, and we were always given like a topic to provide to like provide some context for that quarter. And my speeches were always very sentimental. So it was like the left brain of me, or like, yeah, like my left brain meeting my right brain. And I noticed that the things that I said and how I said them had an effect on the audience, like on my peers. And that's when I realized, like, I'm actually pretty good at this and I enjoyed it. And I have a lot to say because, like, writing became my way of expressing myself. Like, that was my outlet because I internalized a lot as a child. And then through writing, I was able to, like, process that, work through it, and transform it. So I've always loved writing and I've always like been in and out of writing. And it's funny because I used to get a lot of great feedback from my English teachers when I was in high school, and that felt really good. And it's funny because it felt good, but it felt good like in a happy way, not
Sure.
in a way where like I would do good in my math and science classes too and get feedback, and that felt good, but that was like my anger. Was like, yes, I am good, thank you very much. And it's funny because even in college, we tended to be grouped into like our majors when we had to take like our general education classes. And so when we took freshman English, I was with all the engineers, of course. And the English teacher talked to me after class one day and was like, "You should take my creative writing class next semester." So I did, and I loved it. It was like one of my favorite classes. Like, it didn't actually feel like I had to work at it. All I had to do was like just show up to class and like, do what I love to do. I don't know. Maybe I should have been like an English teacher or a writer. I don't know. But so I've always written, but I started writing more and actually sharing. I never shared my writing until the pandemic, until 2020. I felt very affected by what was going on. And I th there's this writer that I follow on Instagram, and I noticed that she would hold writing workshops. So I signed up for a workshop, and she was a published author, and she also wrote poetry, and I loved it because it was very therapeutic. Like, it was a writing workshop, but the prompts were meant to tap into pain, basically. So that became my practice. Like, I ended up doing more workshops with her. I ended up doing like a whole seasonal immersion with her. And like, now that has to be a part of my life in some way. Like, if I'm not doing work with her, I'm still doing work like within the container that she shows us how to hold for ourselves. And like, I have to write. Like, it's just part of my life now.
Yeah, no, I think it's, I mean, again, I'm a firm believer that writing is therapeutic.
So therapeutic.
I'm also a believer that we should put out our stories. It's hard
Yeah.
for a lot of people to do that though, because it's the it goes
Yes.
back to the root of feeling accepted, I should say. So when people struggle to put out their first book, you usually in your head like, oh, nobody's gonna read this. Anybody gonna buy it? 'Cause, I mean, that's a natural thing. It's you putting out yourself in the most vulnerable space possible, especially depending on what you're talking about, and then hopes to make some sort of profit off of that. But just to kind of get your story out, some people never really cross that hump. Have you ever performed any of your pieces before?
It's funny because the writing instructor, she told me, she was like, "Crystal, you'd be great. You'd be great at slam poetry." So that's something that I've been very curious about. But no, I have not like actually performed them other than like within the workshops, right? Because that's part of the workshop is sharing, but that's it. And I've shared on Instagram and things like that, but you're right. Like, it's very hard because I'm very good at like sharing the angry pieces, but then I'm very like, I don't know, I'm very like not hesitant because I do it anyway, but it's harder
Yeah.
to share the most the more sensitive pieces that come from like more of a painful side and not necessarily this angry side. It's harder.
Yeah, that is the reason why I have not performed any of my stuff yet either. I feel like a lot of my stuff is very personal. I'm actually finishing up a book right now that I'm trying to release this year, and all of the pieces are very sensitive. If somebody asks me, "Do you plan on performing any of them?" I'm like, "I don't know," because just but I want to though because I want to respect the art form. Like I think it's one of those things that if you're gonna do one part of it, you got to do the whole thing. Because it's just you never know how your pieces can really speak to somebody, and it usually is just again it's us in our head hoping that it sounds right to others, but sometimes that person that's up there stumbling and nervous, it still relates to somebody in a way because it's you being authentic to something that's important to you, man. So hopefully that you do some slam poetry too. It's also holding myself accountable as well to get out there. Can I do? I want to perform at least one. I feel like I have to do at least one. But I think the problem is if I do one, I'm gonna get the itch to want to do two.
Yes.
That
That is
is my
awesome.
fear.
I'm
That's
so
my.
curious. What is the name of your book going to be called? Do you have a title yet?
Oh, I do. Yeah, it's pretty much done. It's called See You Soon.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, see you soon. So I guess I should start promoting it now. So See You Soon is a book I have spent several years on. A lot of it is centered around a lot of relationships that I've been in, and it sounds really bad when you read them, but a lot of it is what I've learned in some of these experiences. Some of them are also just pulled from other people's experiences that I've heard, and I've turned them into stories. But a lot, I would say 70% of them are probably from something that I've experienced in some capacity, whether it was a first date or a long relationship or a text message I received or a movie I watched or just a moment. And so it's pretty much I have curated like an album in a sense, and it's like broken down into four parts. Essentially, like the first part is like the introduction to this person going through these various stages. Because the themes are centered around like heartbreak, betrayal is a big one, forgiveness is another one, and then self-reflection. But the fourth part of the book is probably my three most vulnerable pieces because I broke that fourth part down called lingering love. Well, with three people that I had three different situations with, and they all impacted me in a significant way. But each of them were uniquely different. And if you look at them, I learned something significant, all three of them. Like one of them was just like right person, wrong time. We both were hesitant to, I guess, pull that trigger. One of them was probably the most profound one because I thought I finally found that person. And then she just abruptly vanished and self-sabotaged. 4 days before my birthday, which is that's another story. But the thing is though, because of all the other parts that I went into, that was actually the easiest one to let go of. Which is weird, but by far cut me the deepest because I felt that highest sense of betrayal. Like I finally felt like I've met the person that I really could trust. And then it's like we're walking down this path together, and it's like the person turns around and they have a knife and they stab you. And it's like we gotta stop here. And they keep going. And then the last piece that ends it off is about somebody I was with. And again, two great people just could not fit a puzzle. But also the lingering question of what could have been. And that's probably my biggest self-reflective one. It's like taking the onus of why it didn't work out from my perspective, but also understanding like what I did wrong as well. There's a couple pieces in between as well where I write from two sides. So like I write from like the hurt man in one side and I write from a woman's perspective on why something didn't work out. So now I took a lot of time with it, but the last situation that I explained about the knife reference kind of re-sparked that. God, I was so mad. So I was so mad that I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. I didn't go off on them. I didn't cuss them out. I just, told them to take care of themselves and that was it. But the knife feeling still comes from time to time because it's just a reminder of that, you're human and you connect with people in different ways. And Some things do just serve their purpose in a short amount of time. But the dialogue the two people have together, you would assume is going a totally different path. You see the hill and where it's supposed to go, but not knowing that the other person had their own agenda along the way. So that's the thing. So yeah, it's something that I'm pretty much done with, but I want to do some visuals behind it. So I have like some pieces I need to like perform, not like in a concert, but like perform as audios. I want to shoot some videos behind it. Like I really took some time. So I'm trying to get like models and stuff like that. Not like models, but like people that could be a part of it to represent a couple pieces. But my favorite piece, I'm just talking about me, it's about you. My
No, I
favorite
love
piece,
this. I love this so much.
my favorite piece is two of my favorite pieces. I have a piece called I'm the Nice Guy. I'm the nice guy because I've always been told I'm a nice guy, and I am a nice guy, right? But I think that by nature, though, I had to learn that being the nice guy and doing all these kind gestures, there's a lot of unconscious expectations. So the nice guy becomes very resentful. I had to learn that about myself. So that's about that. And then my other one is called Spiritual Goodbye. That's probably my second favorite one as well, where, well, I guess they kind of tie together. But Spiritual Goodbye is essentially about a woman who uses God as a reference of why she needs to leave. But you discover more that it wasn't really about God, it was her own guilty conscience. So I think it's really good, like the whole thing together, because I put a lot of time into it. But yeah, I'm excited to show it at some point. I haven't picked a date yet, but it will be sometime in 2025. Yeah.
Where do you intend to show it? Like live
Oh,
in person or social media?
talking about the book? Yep, I will
The
self-publish it.
visuals.
All the visuals will be, on my Instagram page, probably do YouTube. It's a whole thing. I got like me and my closest friends, they're really creative.
Oh,
And
that
so I
is
told them,
fun.
I was like, look, man, like I need y'all help me put this together. Because I think that it could mean something. It can mean a lot. And I had to really like rewrite a couple pieces because some of them I got a little too personal with. So I sounded a little like really bitter. But I'm not bitter. I just think that I'm somebody that has I just loved very hard. And so because of that, especially around 20s, like I told like my high school kids when they go to college, like it's a very defining time, but usually your development usually comes through your interactions with people, whether it's friendships or relationships. And then most of the kids I work with are boys because I work at all boys school. I actually my old high school for context. So you got a lot of young males going to college, and they have all these ideas of what life's supposed to be like. And I just try to tell them, like, you're going to meet a lot of amazing people along the way. Well, you probably will fall in love once or twice. You'll probably get your heart broken once or twice, and you find a way to navigate through that. But you don't change the essence of who you are. That's kind of the biggest thing that I got from that, is that I learned that within each experience that I was having with somebody, I was losing a piece of me because at the core, I am a kind person. I'm not mean and evil spirited, but because of all the things that I was experiencing at some point, everybody that I connected with was experiencing a different version of me. But the last knife that I experienced, that one just reminded me not to change who I am. Because I wanted to go there, but I recognized that I will be losing the essence of who I am. So that is that's enough about
I'm
me.
gonna have to
Love
make
you
sure to
guys.
follow you because I would
Yeah.
love to see this. Oh my God, that sounds so
Yes.
powerful.
I told my friends this. I was like, if this is executed properly, I think it can resonate with a lot of people. I really do. The other end too, why it's called See You Soon is because I know some people who I've encountered, they may hear about it and they may contact me. So that's why I say see you soon. So
That's right.
it's a
That's
yes.
right.
So it's like, okay, it's like, if you do this and it gets to those people, it's a conversation that may need to happen. But I'm also not like hiding from people, and nor am I offending anybody in a way. Like the writing is just through perspective and it's through emotions. Like I'm not saying that I hate you or you're a terrible person or it's just this experience happened. This is what I learned from it. Also, it's the truth. So the
Well,
truth.
It's our truth for sure, you know? And
Yeah.
it's like, that's what I love about writing too. Like, 'cause I used to judge myself a lot about like, I should like, why am I still holding on to this? Why am I still mad about this? Why is this coming up for me? Where did that come from? And it's like, it's just a snapshot in time, you
Yeah.
know? And in that snapshot in time, that was my truth. And if you're in my life, I'm gonna write about you at some point.
I also tell people that too in the beginning. I am a writer. So
Yeah.
you are subjected to be a part of it. Because at the end of the day, it is our truth, I
Yeah.
always say that to write, you do hold a responsibility not to ruin the image of somebody, to protect your experience, which is why, again, there's a couple of pieces I write in there where I'm writing from two sides of the coin.
Yeah.
One of my favorite pieces also, I forgot, it's called Double-Sided Story. And so a
Oh.
little bit of a back story, I guess. So again, in my 20s, not a lot of people, but sniffing experience, I was with somebody that had a kid, and we were together for 3 years, and I helped raise their kid, and the daughter essentially becomes like,
My God.
and my daughter, right? And so
Yeah.
we were about to get married, and we bought a house together, and I left after 10 days of getting the house. I let her keep the house. But I also lost the connection with the kid. And I tell people all the time, that's by far the worst thing that anybody can ever experience. Granted, I understand the significance because I made the choice to walk away from everything, but that is a grief that I don't know most people can handle. Because the difference between losing your kid and they're no longer here. The difference between losing a child and they're still alive. And you're not their biological parent. So you don't really have much of a say in it. You have to respect the process. And then that person that was with got married like 7 months later, but that's another convo. Another day.
I can, you know, it's so funny, like even when you just describe the nice guy story, like as a woman, I can still relate because I can relate as the overgiver.
Right. And that's what
You
it's
know?
about. I mean, it's really, I think for me, a lot of those things that I'm writing about is just I've overextended myself a lot, with a lot of things and people. And it's been hard to grasp that because just in my natural core and sense, I am giving. I mean, this is another prime example, and it's not because of the platform. Like, I have taken time out of my day to connect with random strangers. And get their stories on a platform because, again, I think that matters. I'm not doing this for some weird publicity. This is just like people that I've never talked to a day in my life, and they have a story that matters. So I don't, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't change that part of me because that's just who I am. But I've also learned like how dangerous that can be as far as like people who really know me, or who I really have given my trust to, where they know that at my core I am that, because they see it in so many different examples and they still take advantage of it. And then when they see the other side, they're like, who is this guy? But it's kind of like, well, you kind of got me here. Like, I didn't ask to be here. All I've done is given you my entire, being. Because I think, again, if you're with somebody, friendships, whatever, like, I give people the same thing, 110%. I will do what I can at a drop of a dime. Don't always expect things in return, because everything we do in life, it shouldn't be about a ROI. I th also think the energy that you put out, you will eventually get back. They never say when. I wish I could know when, because sometimes I'm kind of like I'm overdue. But it's, I don't really lose sleep over that though. At the end of the day, like, I really just have used those experiences to try to tell something. Like, yeah, overgiving is hard, and I know so many women, especially, that have overextended themselves, and I think that's what breaks my heart when I talk to like my clients that are women. They're broken at this point. They've given their entire all to people, and again, especially mothers that I have, where there was this guy that they were with that they thought they was going to spend the rest of their life with, and they had a kid, and then everything just went left, and it was hard for them to date again. They don't know what to do. All these different identities that they're struggling with. So I always very much empathize with that, because I get it. I'm getting it a lot more now because I'm talking more to women about that experience. As even my mom, she grew up like that. Like, my mom and dad were together till I was 9 months. Man, I mean, she got married a couple of years later, and she's still married to my stepfather, which is great. But I think about how many other women don't necessarily get that, I guess, second chance, where
Right.
get out of a situation with the child's father, and they never find that feeling again because of the situation and what happened. So,
Yeah.
completely different topic from where we went to, but yeah, I just think that's just something that you got to explore more because people have real things going on. And it's not just about what we do for work.
Yeah.
Honestly, work is should be least of our problems, but it's most of our problems. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree so much, and it's like a huge part, like, of my own healing, right? Like with like the overgiving is like first realizing what was really at the core of my overgiving. But also like learning how to give to myself, and also like learning how to actually have expectations of people, because part of the reason why I didn't is because I didn't feel like I had permission to. Like, when I was younger, it's like I felt like a burden. I felt like I had to earn love. I felt like I had to earn attention, and like prove my value and worth, right? So it's like, oh, well, let me give, 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 and then you'll see it at the end of the tunnel. And it's like, no, they never saw it at the end of the tunnel. So, filling out or figuring out like how to give that love to me, but then also how to have expectations of other people was really, really, really hard for me. And like actually learning that like relationships should be balanced. You give, you receive, you give, you receive. And if you're not receiving, then there gets to be a limit to the giving. Which feels so counterintuitive to like my trauma and who I am as a person. But then, like you said, right? Like we become resentful, and then it destroys the relationship.
No, it 100% does. I think that lack of appreciation that goes. I feel like I'm plugging my book as I go on. I wrote a piece called "Faded Appreciation," where I think that's kind of the same concept. It's like the simple things that people do for people often gets taken for granted after a while. So, like, I'll use an example of my own personal life when there's like people that I'm seeing, but I know their love language. I tried to show up in that instance consistently. So if I was dating somebody and they love flowers, I've done that. This person's getting flowers every 10 days. Got to know when the flowers die. But after a while, when you first get the flowers, a little bit different than the 15th time. I was like, oh, it's the 10th day again. He's giving me flowers again. It's like, but it's the problem is though, it's like, who's to say you're gonna find that again? That person to do it regardless of where the relationship may stand at. I think that's the part that I think people really forget about. And that's something I had to learn relatively early. And it goes back to the expectations and even the overgiving part. For me, I always knew that my mother and my grandmother loved me unconditionally, did not matter. But I feel like a lot of times, especially in my, again, more intimate personal relationships, I had to overextend myself because the people I was connected to were so hurt, they were so damaged. And I'm trying to show them that I mean peace and I'm safe and all these different things. And half the time they weren't used to the experience. And so I'm overextending myself more for them to feel safe. It's like wearing a cape. My therapist used to tell me to take off the cape. And I finally got it. Like it makes sense to take off the cape, but it didn't. Like, but after a while, I sit back and think, I'm like, dang, I'm not even getting nearly half of what I'm giving you. And this is just on a consistent basis. Like I am showing up like this all the time and you're picking spots. Now I'm this again, I'm this angry, upset, mean individual because I have given myself up over and over. And now all these little small things that I keep happening, I'm like, oh, it's okay. Knowing that I was bothered by it. But not wanting to have that conversation, confrontation. So it's like yeah, the expectations is hard, man. But I've had to learn that as well. Like I very much have embraced this selfish part of my life where I tell people now, man, look, it's like this is what I expect. I will give you the world if I feel like you've earned it. because I was just giving people the world, and they did not earn it. They didn't. They just existed. So you got to meet them. You got to meet me in the middle somehow.
Yeah. And the people that will meet you in the middle are the people that actually don't need you. And
Agree.
that's feels hard too, because it's like it's like you have to kind of rewire the part of your brain that wants to give, because it's coming from a place of feeling like you have to give in order to receive, be loved, and all that. It's like, this person doesn't really need me, but that's actually the person that I should be in relationship with.
Yeah, the more needier, the more problematic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've learned that so much. Well, this has been a great and therapeutic part of this episode, so that's great.
Yeah, this has been incredible. We
I
have
appreciate
a lot in common.
that. Yeah. I
Right.
gotta ask. Some people aren't, some people are. I just are you into like zodiac signs?
I love astrology. I love
Okay,
it
so
all. Astrology, human design, biology,
what are
all of it.
okay, so what is your sign? Let's start there.
Virgo.
Okay, that's why I'm a
I'm
Pisces. I
a
think.
My sun sign is Virgo. My moon is so in Western astrology, I have a moon in, I don't know if it's Aries or Pisces, but
It's
then
probably
in
Pisces.
Eastern astrology, it's Aries or Pisces, and I get them mixed up. It might be
Yeah.
Pisces, and then my
Yeah.
rising is Sagittarius,
Okay, I could actually see that.
which is how the world sees me, right? The world sees me
I
and
could
it's
see
like,
that.
oh, fiery, powerful, and I'm like, I'm
Yeah.
really sensitive too, and I cry a lot.
Yeah. My mom's a Sagittarius, and Lord, it's like
So's mine.
two different sides of the coin. It's like the nicest woman you'll meet, but if you see her and you make her mad, you wouldn't think she was like that. No, I'm a it's like I said, I'm a Pisces. All the other parts of it, that's when I get a little lost. I want to say though, I know I have some sort of Scorpio in me too.
I could see that. I could see that. Like, with Scorpio is very, it's so interesting because Scorpio, I feel like people hear Scorpio and they're like, oh, stinger. But
Yeah.
Scorpio is a water sign, and
Yeah.
they're supposed to be like the deepest water sign. It's like, as you move through the year, the intensity of the element becomes like increases.
Sure.
So it's like, what's the first water sign? Is it
I think it's us. I think it's the Pisces.
Pisces?
Yeah, because wait, is Aquarius? Not Aquarius, are they?
I
Water?
think Aquarius is air.
Yeah, no, they weren't first then.
Yeah. I don't know who the first is, but then it's like, then it goes Pisces, then it goes Cancer, and then it goes Sagittarius. So Sagittarius is like the most, like, deepest emotional water sign. Maybe
That's
that
interesting.
explains the fire at the other end. I don't know.
Don't know. I tell people it's two sides of us, man. So very much in by nature, feel it though. I feel everything. I've learned to control it. I used to take over. Not like I used to get aggressive or mad, but again, like the emotions would be so intense. So I had to find a way to channel that because it would just sit for a long time. I'm either in the bed rotting. Or I'm playing some of the most disrespectful songs of all time to like
Yeah.
articulate.
I mean, that's the same. And like, it's funny because I never knew, like, I never knew how much I would emotionally suppress when I was a child. Like, particularly in like early middle school through high school, because
Yeah.
like I knew that as a child, I was very intuitive, and I was very sensing. Like,
Yeah.
I just knew it. But then, I grew up around adults who were like, you're just a child. You don't know what you're talking about. You're too sensitive. You're too emotional, blah, blah, blah. You're too bratty. And so then su suppressing that, right? Like, as I got older, and then realizing like, no, I need to make peace with this part of myself because like this is literally part of like my biological core. And so now how do I coexist with this side of me? And then like even like how do I heal with it so that I can use it? That came so much later than life.
How do you think you got to that point?
Pain. I mean, so relationship. Like, I knew that I can do anything I want. Like, anytime I have a goal, I can do it. All I have to do is put my mind to it. But then, but I was like, why can't I do this with relationship? Like in particular, romantic relationship. Like, it's not as easy. Like, what am I missing? And so the falling out of a relationship is what catapulted this like deeper journey of something's missing. Like, there's something missing, and I don't know why this area of my life feels like it's not working. And that part of my journey, which I feel like started probably when I was like maybe like 34, 35, like really sent me into the deep end of like, I guess, uncovering myself and discovering more about who I am. Yeah. And how I built myself and doing the healing part around that. Yeah.
That's some people learn later than that, so you
Oh
know.
my, that's true. That's true. I guess I
Yeah,
should be grateful.
because I mean, I feel like, you know, most people don't really know themselves until they're 40, if I'm being honest. Because there's so much unlearning that has to happen, and I think the 20s is like the, how do I best describe it? It's just you're doing all of the stupidest things. 30s is starting to click or it makes sense, and then 40s is pretty much you kind of establish yourself and who you are, and you're just trying to really enjoy the life that you either have made or are making in that present moment. So that's I think each, I don't think there's like a right time to learn. I just think it is important that we do take that time to learn those things, because that does matter. I wanted to transition for a
Yes.
second. Transition to career coaching. You say you do that.
Yeah.
Is that what helping people with engineering, or how do you help people out in that space?
Yeah. It started just by I started by coaching for my teacher, right? Like the teacher that I met in the pandemic took a few workshops and was like, I'm hooked. And I ended up going through his coaching certification program. I coached for him for about a year and a half. But he is from Mexico and his business is based in Mexico. And so the more that that side of his business took off, the less attention he could give to like his English coaches. So now he's just all Mexico. And I was like, well, I don't speak Spanish. So yeah, that's when I started my own coaching practice. And it's like, it's career coaching, but I'm really looking for people who are like me, right? Very like, kind of like mid to advanced career, right? Like you've got some skin in the game, you've been in it for a while, successful and high achieving, but and don't really have the option to like just quit your job and like go and find your passion, right? But you know that your life could be better, or something is not missing, or something's missing, or like maybe you're even unhappy with your career. Because I felt like because I went into engineering not really knowing myself, I've gone through phases where I love my career, I hate my career. I love my career, I hate my career. But I was a single mom for most of my kids' life. So it's not like I could quit my job, and I didn't have a big support system either. So I had to figure out who I was in the midst of still taking care of my responsibilities. So that's like, those are the people that I'm looking for. Right, is like you're looking to be happy where you are because it's not for nothing. I mean, I've been an engineer for like almost 20 years now, you know? Like I don't want to just throw it all away and start over, but how do I be happier where I'm at? How do I find purpose and be an engineer instead of feeling like, well, I have to just throw that part of me away. No, because that part of me is a great part of me. I mean, I have built a pretty good career. So how do I have both?
The duality of it. Yeah, because it's hard to I do try to keep it in perspective. It is hard for people to just kind of stop doing everything and take like that great risk to find themselves in happiness when the economy is what it is. People got kids. I know it's a little bit easier said than done if you may not be in that space. But that stuff does matter. So how do we find that balance or understanding? Because I used to do career counseling alone like 5 years ago, 3 years ago. But it was with college kids. And so a lot of kids would come up to me like, well, people hate their jobs all the time. So how do you tell them to stay in there? I'm like, I don't. I usually tell them to find something that's meaningful, but I also am realistic and understanding. I was like, a lot of it depends on where you're at in life. If you got kids, it may not be as feasible to do that. If you're younger, sure, you can take that risk, but it just depends. But I also think the biggest thing is just having that self-assessment. Like, do you actually hate your job? Yes or no? If you do, why? Right? And figure that out. Because I don't think it doesn't really matter what you do. There's something within every industry, whether you're doing your dream job or not, there's something that you're gonna hate. I hate documentation.
Same.
Like working with clients, I hate it. It's by far my biggest weakness. I don't care about it. It matters. It matters, but I don't care about it. I love podcasting, but I hate the edit.
Same.
It's always something that
So
you're working with.
frustrating.
It's just something. It's always something that you're doing. I love writing, but I hate marketing. Like there's something that it's always a part of it. Something that we're not gonna like. But before we wrap up, I do have one more final question for you. What does it mean to be human to you?
Right now, to be human means to be raw and open. I think that's where I'm at in my journey right now. Because as hard as it is to be with pain, if you can't be with the pain, you can't be with the joy. And oh, I'm probably gonna start crying.
No, I don't have a crime on Sunday, please.
I want to feel it all.
Please. Get it though. If it happens, it happens. It's all good.
I want to feel it all, but that also means that I have to be willing to sit with the things that are painful as well. And I think what I've learned, where like in my life now, because I've been through a lot and I've come back from everything. So now, when I am faced with situations that are painful or I feel like will be painful, I can still go through them knowing that there's nothing that I can't come back from.
Yeah.
Pain won't kill
Which
me.
I'd say it makes you stronger
Yeah.
at times, not all the
It
time.
does.
No, it's the resilience is important, and it also adds on to the nature of our human experience. We are designed to suffer, whether we want to believe it or not, regardless of what background you believe. Every origin of their experiences is centered around suffering. Although I identify as a Christian, it was a part of time that I used to study Buddhism, and understanding the story of Buddha, coming from the sense of being in a very wealthy family to go out to the streets for regular people to recognize that the world isn't as great as his life was, and that's awesome and give it all away to be around the common folks and realize that the art of life is through suffering. And finding oneself. You do learn a lot about yourself through those those suffering moments. If that was the case, that wasn't the case, then it wouldn't have a point. Suffering wouldn't really matter. We wouldn't have the learning lessons behind it if we didn't have those moments of pain. And the city is also just, it's nasty, man. I hate it, but it is also needed. So I appreciate the answer, and I really do appreciate this time. I didn't know that it's probably the first episode I've had where I've probably have shared more about myself than anybody else. So I don't know. I don't know if it's a
But
good
there's
thing, but
so
I'll.
much there's so much we have in common. It's great.
That might be it too. I think also, it's sometimes it's just it happens like that. I think that's why I enjoy it like this. I don't ever know what I'm getting myself into. I'm like, some I'm kind of like, all right, this is fine, this is great, I have nothing to say. But with you, I had, I guess, an urge to share more, I guess, because you had you inquired. So when somebody inquires, and I feel like I am obligated to answer. So I do appreciate you. I really do appreciate you taking the time. Where can people find you on social media?
So my writing account, they find me on Instagram. My writing account is at Crystal Amber underscore writer. And then from there, I have a link to my career coaching account, which is Crystal Jaimes Coaching.
Okay. That sounds good. For those who are listening, that information will be in the episode description. Crystal, thank you so much for joining. This has been another episode of Knowing Is Knowing. Make sure to subscribe to the audio platform. Don't make sure to subscribe on your favorite audio platform and to check me out on YouTube. Till next time, guys. Peace. Lord, I can't
Thank you
talk.
so much.